It's the Capital Connection this week. No, not with Alan Chartok, who is away. It's the producer, David Gustina. That's me filling in. And we're joined by a regular guest on the program this week who converses about New York State government and politics. We're talking about Ken Lovett, Albany Bureau Chief for the New York Daily News. We really should call this the Lovett Connection, shouldn't we? Shouldn't we, Ken? Welcome to the program.
It's good to be back.
Well, Ken, you know, I could start with the primaries, which sort of took over the news this week, of course, primary week across New York State. But I want to start with something else. How was the Paul McCartney show?
The Paul McCartney show was very good. Very good. I know he's going to be up in Syracuse in a couple of weeks. Guy's 75 years old, and his voice isn't necessarily what it once was. I've seen him a bunch of times.
Sure.
But guy played 2 hours and 45 minutes. Beatles, Wings, solo stuff, still playing the bass, two guitars, an acoustic guitar, and piano.
Sure. And you are a huge concert goer. I know you like to see many concerts. You'll see them wherever they're playing in the greater Northeast, but I really reference Paul McCartney because you have talked, and I have talked to you about, the Paul McCartney Governor Andrew Cuomo fundraiser scheduled coming up.
Good segue, yes. On September 17th, Paul McCartney is having a concert at Madison Square Garden, and Andrew Cuomo, I guess, rented out a box at the Garden for that night and is having a limited fundraiser. I'm sure that it's very pricey for his donors. I think it's going to hold up to 24 people. I don't think McCartney necessarily knows about it unless the governor's good buddy Billy Joel, who also is friends with McCartney, told him about it. But yeah, so I guess guests who pay up will not only get to see the show, but there'll be cocktails a half hour before the show, and you'll be in the box, the skybox, with the governor and other donors.
It's quite an incentive.
It is an incentive. I mean, that's probably the first fundraiser that I would ever volunteer to cover, and not for the fundraising operation part of it. And then a couple of days later, or later in the month, he's holding a fundraiser not as glamorous at Citi Field, where the Mets, who are having a really horrible year, are playing the Braves, who are having a horrible year at the end of the season here. So that one's a lot less expensive, my guess is. That one is going for between $5,000 and $7,500 a head.
Yeah, of course, he's not hurting for money. I mean, we know he has somewhere between $25 and $30 million in his campaign.
Yeah, in July, he reported nearly $26 million, and he's been fundraising pretty steadily. You know, it's a sign that he's serious about it. He says he's going to seek re-election in 2018. Some people still are skeptical. I wouldn't be surprised if ultimately he did not, but certainly he's doing everything you need to do to run, and he says he's going to run, and $26 million is a nice head start over a lot of his would-be opponents.
I wonder if the mayor of New York City will endorse him. Let's go to this now, the primaries. We'll start with the sort of lead primary of the week, which would be, and there's some other things we want to talk about, of course, but New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio breezes through the primary, 74% of the vote. The sort of backtalk that I just referenced was, would Cuomo endorse de Blasio? Would de Blasio endorse Cuomo? Cuomo had said, well, I don't live in the city.
You know, for a while we were calling the two frenemies, you know,
yeah.
Friends who are sometimes enemies. I don't think that's really the phrase anymore. They are now full-blown enemies, and they have been for quite a while. They don't like each other, and they fight, and they feud. And the governor refused, notably, to endorse the mayor's primary in the Democratic primary. And just for way of background, they had been friends. They had worked together at HUD, and when the governor was the HUD secretary under Bill Clinton, you know, he hired de Blasio. And if you remember in 2014, when the governor was going for the Working Families Party nomination, you know, it's a minor party, but it's union-backed, it's very liberal and progressive, and the governor, they didn't want to back the governor. And it was Mayor de Blasio who stepped in and helped the governor get that endorsement and get that
nomination. Came up to Albany here, right?
Came up to Albany and pulled his acorns out of the fire, as they say. And so this time around, the governor gave him no such kind of help. Not that he needed it, but at first, and it was laughable, not almost laughable. His reason was, I don't live in the city, so I can't vote in the mayoral primary, so I'm not going to take a stand. Which is hilarious because he had already endorsed 4 New York City council members.
Right.
He went on to endorse 6 of them. He endorsed the Nassau County in the Nassau County executive race and others. And the reality is, the governor is the governor. He's the titular head of the Democratic Party. He endorses people outside of his Westchester County voting area all the time. but he refused to do so. And as I said, his reasoning drew a lot of scoffing and laughing because, you know, to say, oh, I don't vote in the city was really not even an attempt to hide how much you dislike de Blasio if you're the governor. And then he took some heat on that, and he was asked about it a couple of days ago, and he wouldn't still endorse him, but he said he doesn't really need the endorsement because, you know, you don't take anything for granted, but he's going to win that primary big, which, of course, the mayor did.
Well, and I think one of the other side things that is going on here is the speculation that Governor Cuomo will run for president in 2020. Of course, you have 2018 first, but the idea that he's been moving, quote, to the left, and you've got the progressive in de Blasio down in New York City, and Cuomo seems to be moving toward that mantle as well.
And de Blasio was asked in a magazine interview, will you endorse the governor in 2018? And he said, I'm focused on 2017. He would not say he would. And most people think not only will the mayor not endorse Cuomo, but will probably torture him in terms of trying to find a progressive primary candidate. Don't forget, the mayor is term limited out. And so he's going to be emboldened. Yes, they still need the state for a lot of things. But the reality is, governor's not going to help him anyway. So I would not be surprised to see behind the scenes and even openly the mayor aggressively doing what he can to undermine the governor next year.
Well, it looks like the governor got some help with this race in Suffolk County.
Well, the governor certainly did because I had a column on Monday that said there was a race for Suffolk County sheriff that involved a state senator, Phil Boyle, a Republican, a longtime incumbent. He's also conservative. He was expected to win, and the feeling was that there was a deal cut that if he won, which would open up his Senate seat in January, instead of waiting till January, he would resign almost immediately, which would allow for a special election in November. The Republicans had asked him basically to do that because they feel they have a better chance when it's not a general election to win the race there. And there would have been a lot of pressure on the governor. I wrote on Monday that the Democrats want him to financially help that race. It would have been a difficult race for them, but they feel that if the governor would have helped raise money and given money from the state party and done other things, they would have a chance of winning it. And obviously that all ties into fight for control of the state Senate, which the Democrats have a numerical majority right now, but they don't control the chamber because there's 8 breakaway Democrats who are aligned with the Republicans and then a 9th who actually sits with the Republicans. So the governor was going to face a lot of pressure. Well, that pressure is no more right now because Phil Boyle surprisingly lost the election. And so his Senate seat is still filled. And then there's other primaries that could impact the race for the Senate next year. You know, Ruben Diaz from the Bronx, he won a city council primary. He has said he's going to stay on till the end of the year, which means the Democrats will go into the new year with a vacancy there. And George Latimer, a senator from Westchester County, won his Democratic primary for a county executive. If he beats Rob Astorino in November, that's a second seat that the Democrats are going to have to make up, you know, going into the new year.
Doesn't the governor have to show his support for the Democrats in the Senate if he wants to run for higher office?
That's the feeling that he's been moving to the left, you know, on policy the last year. Really, since Zephyr Teachout, a little-known Fordham professor, gave him a scare in the 2014 Democratic primary.
With virtually no money.
With virtually no money. So he's trying to, like, thwart any kind of real primary challenge. And there's been names out there from Syracuse Mayor Stephanie Miner to actress Cynthia Nixon to Jamani Williams, a New York City councilman, and former upstate Senator Terry Gibson. Those names are out there. But really, if he was weakened, you might start hearing names like Eric Schneiderman, the Attorney General, and even Tom DiNapoli, you know, the comptroller, although less likely. And so he's trying to avoid all that. And so the feeling is he cannot go into the election year next year with the Democrats split in the Senate, that he's going to have to try and unify them. And it's not an easy task.
I guess one thing he can claim credit for is having stood with Nancy Pelosi and vowed to go after these upstate Republican districts like Congressman John Faso in the 19th, Stefanik in the 21st, Collins out in Western New York, and Reed is another one.
And Claudia Tenney.
Sure. So we've got right. And lo and behold, challenges are coming out of the woodwork.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, if they win, he's going to get a lot of credit for that. But it's also, you know, he targeted districts that are really tough districts. He didn't target, for instance, John Katko, who everyone agrees is probably the most vulnerable of the New York Republican delegation, but he didn't target him. Not yet, anyway. They targeted Lee Zeldin down on Long Island, but not Peter King. So we'll see how actively he works on that, but certainly he says he's going to be fully engaged in trying to help the House flip.
All right, let's move on to some of the other races. I guess the major races were the mayoral races. Albany Mayor Kathy Sheehan breezes to another term.
Albany Mayor Kathy Sheehan, yeah, there were no real surprises. I mean, you know, Sheehan won. Byron Brown in Buffalo,
right,
who's an ally of the governor, who's the co-chair of the state party, he won. You had Syracuse. There was a little bit of a surprise.
Explain that one.
Well, you know, the party candidate didn't win.
That's right.
And he's lost, I think, 3 out of 4 now in the primaries. But the woman who did win is a former Cuomo aide and someone who's close to Cuomo. And why that's important is
right,
that Stephanie Miner, who's the current mayor who is term limited out and was once Cuomo's handpicked co-chairwoman of the state party and has since been feuding with him because she dared to criticize him publicly over policy, she and the governor do not like each other. The governor doesn't really go to Syracuse much. When he's in the area, he doesn't invite her to events.
Recently at the state fair?
Recently at the state fair, she was not there with him. So it would be different for the governor to have an ally in Syracuse at City Hall. So that was an interesting race. You know, again, Brown, Byron Brown is. You know, de Blasio won.
Lovely Warren in Rochester.
She won hers.
Which is an embattled city.
Which is an embattled city, but it wasn't unexpected that she would win and win big. So, you know, no real surprise. I think the biggest surprise was the Phil Boyle race.
Sure, on Suffolk County.
Hiram Montserrat, we don't usually focus on city council races up there, but an assemblyman, Francisco Moya, was challenging Hiram Montserrat. If you remember that name, he was a state senator who became the first state lawmaker who was voted out of the legislature by the legislature after he was convicted of misdemeanor assault in which he slashed his girlfriend with a glass. So he had been bounced from the legislature, and then he went to the city council, and he was serving there until he was convicted, or actually he was at the city council first, excuse me. But after he got bounced from the legislature, he was convicted of having misappropriated funds for personal use from the city council.
I'm shocked.
And then he tried to run again for council this year, but Moya beat him easily.
It's amazing because we have seen folks have these problems and go back and win.
You know, it's getting very strange. Montserrat lost, so I guess this is against it.
Yeah.
But I always, when I'm on with Alan, I've used this number a bunch of times that in 2014, three state lawmakers and a sitting congressman all won re-election while under indictment. All of them won, and they ended up not serving their full terms because they were all convicted and had to leave office. But, you know, the public doesn't seem to care anymore. That used to be disqualifiers, automatic, an indictment, a conviction. Those used to be automatic disqualifiers. And now, not so much.
It's interesting. And what there also is, you know, that person's bad over there, but not my person.
But Montserrat did lose, I guess.
Sure.
Whether it was the assault on his girlfriend or stealing money from the office you're now seeking, again, the voters said, yeah, no, that's okay. We don't need you.
Yeah, well, let's stay with that for a second. That's the real problem, not only in New York, but around the country and perhaps even in many countries around the world. Turnout.
I mean, these primaries are decided, you know, and especially in some areas where, you know, the Albany mayor, the New York City Council, when you win the primary, you have basically won the election.
Yeah, it's a few thousand votes. That's it.
And it's only a few thousand votes. And when you win the primary, there's no Republican or token Republican opposition. And so the primary is it, and it's decided by a small percentage of voters. And
we even saw in Gloversville, the mayor there lost by 57 votes in the primary. Now he's on the conservative line, so he'll still be in the main race, but 57 votes.
Yeah.
And this state and the country is horrendous when it comes to turnout. Are people just turned off? They don't care? What?
I think that's a large part of it. I think people are just becoming immune to the controversies and the scandals. They're like, you know what? They're all like that, and I don't care. I've got my own stuff going on in my life. So either I'm just going to go out and vote uninformed, basically, or I'm not going to vote at all. And we've seen that voter turnout, you know, across the country, but in New York in particular, has dropped precipitously over the years. You know, the mayor of New York, Bill de Blasio, when he won, he talked about a mandate. He had something like 72% of the vote back when he first won election 4 years ago, and yet only, I think it was 18 or 19 or 20% of the vote. So he got 72 of 20% of the electorate.
It's horrific.
And the governor, I think it was only 30% turned out or somewhere in that 30% turnout in 2014. So, you know, people just aren't paying attention. They're not focused on it.
And yet, And yet, and if we look at the news criteria, what makes news? And that largely things that have impact. And if you're going to look at impact, the state government has a huge impact on people's lives.
But it's almost amorphous. Like people, not always. Like I grew up on Long Island, and you didn't focus a lot on your town local government, but upstate in particular, people do know who their local reps are, and they focus on the town because that's paving the roads and,
correct,
you know, and plowing and all the garbage. So they know that, and obviously they know D.C. because that's just the elephant in the room. And the state government, they just don't get, even though it has a lot of impact, they just don't understand it. It's, you know, miles away in Albany, and I just don't think they focus on it. And I think that a lot of these lawmakers are counting on that, you know,
yeah,
that they get away with this stuff. And I think when you see, you know, you had all those late budgets all those years.
Sure.
And nobody got thrown out of office because of it. You know, they kept getting reelected. So what's the incentive to have an on-time budget? Yes, you took some criticism on April 1 that the budget's late, but it had no tangible impact. You know, you see all these guys under indictment, the four I mentioned in 2014, reelected.
Yeah.
So where is the message to the public officials that you better act or your job is in peril? There is none.
You know, I teach a college course up at SUNY Albany, and they're young kids. I have 8 young women in this class this semester, and we talked the day of the primary about what was making news. And I said, how about the city in which you're living? They didn't know who the mayor was. You know, they didn't know anything. And the point that we make in class is that those who pay attention end up becoming opinion leaders and can make choices based on being informed and not ignorant. And they respond to that once they know, but they're not seeking it out to begin
and,
with.
And how the news is delivered. I mean, we could do a whole show on this,
yeah,
in
sure,
terms of the decline of the media, in terms of newspapers and TV and the number of reporters covering. You know, it's
hey, when you talk about state politics, people click to the next channel.
And I'll tell you, I mean, there have been big stories where you know, I did a lot of stuff on the Moreland, and I
wrote sure
a lot of those stories and talked about Preparara, the U.S. attorney. And then the New York Times did Moreland as well. And others, and then you see a poll come out and 75% don't know what Moreland is or who Preparara is.
That's right.
And in our world, it's just so dominating, but people just aren't tuning into it.
And as you just mentioned, the legislators know it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a big, big thing.
Well, we do have some other trials coming.
We do in the new year, and that could really boomerang on the governor, blow up on the governor. In January, supposedly, Joe Prococo, the former top aide,
right,
to the governor, his trial, his corruption trial, is bribery and corruption, starts. And then later in the year, I think May, you have others who all the pay-to-play and bribery involving a lot of the governor's upstate economic development programs.
Todd Howe, already convicted,
Todd
may
Howe.
Turn.
May turn. You have Elaine Calieros, who headed up SUNY Polytechnic, a big guy in the capital region here in Albany. He's on trial, so it's going to be interesting. It'll be interesting to see what comes out of it. It's going to be interesting to see if it hurts the governor as he heads into reelection. You know, you only have to look at Bridgegate that hurt Chris Christie. He had 2 aides convicted of felonies over that situation where they closed down a part of the George Washington Bridge to get back at a Fort Lee Democratic mayor who wouldn't endorse Chris Christie's reelection. Christie was never criminally implicated in that.
However,
but his numbers came to record lows. And so you've got to watch that kind of impact on the governor. Now, will it have the same? I don't know, because Washington is sucking all the air out of the political drama in this country. So even if bad stuff is coming out, will people be focused on it? Will Donald Trump still be the main draw? Will it still be as controversial? You know, those are all things we're going to see as we get closer.
There may be one politician in New York who benefits from the focus on Washington. That's New York State Attorney General Eric Schneiderman, who has been involved in a number of efforts against the President of the United States. We see the recent one being DACA and the Deferred Action Childhood Arrivals Program, in which he's joined with other states to sue the federal government.
I can't even count how many lawsuits he's been a part of against the Trump administration so far. It seems every other day a new one is
so
announced,
true,
whether it's on immigration or health or other things. The DACA one, you know, it's a big deal to a lot of people. And basically it impacts kids who were brought here as kids, as young kids, illegally by their parents, but have grown up here, have known nothing but America. The Obama administration put in a policy through an executive order that would allow them to basically stay. And the Trump administration rescinded it and basically gave Congress, said, fix it yourself or they go back either way.
even though, Ken, the president came out, he showed, after being convinced by other lawmakers that it was a good program, that he wanted to keep it. And up until the moment that he actually delayed 3 months for them to come up with a plan, the Congress, that is, to either fix it or do away with it, he makes that decision.
Yeah, look, you don't know. You know, you don't know where he's going on a lot of stuff, but certainly there are a lot of people in his base. And you know what? There's a lot of people who felt that it should have been a congressional decision to begin with.
Sure.
That argument can be made that did Obama overstep his bounds with the executive order and blah, blah, blah. But that is an argument. But
Who will fall through the cracks while you're figuring it out.
And while you're debating that, some real people are going to be impacted, you know, when you're having that political debate.
Well, let's go to some of your other headlines this week as we wrap up the show. I see the Majority Leader Flanagan fired 3 of his aides. What's he doing there?
He did, and that's after 4 basically fired him.
Right.
Four top aides had left recently or announced they were leaving. They didn't say, but people close to them said that they didn't like his management style, that the conference was split, particularly between upstate and downstate. And now Flanagan got rid of 3 people who were close to his predecessor, Dean Skelos, who was indicted and convicted and is out on appeal. So 2 were fired recently. The other one is expected to be fired this week. And I think Flanagan wants to put his imprint on the operation. He's been in there for 2 years, and he wants to put his imprint finally on the operation. Now, it comes also as he's left alcohol rehab. And, you know, some people say he's much more focused on the job at hand. And so that could be part of it as well.
Well, the inevitable question, the coming question for New Yorkers on the ballot, the Constitutional Convention. Now, we know Alan, who hosts this program, has decided, at least in his own mind, that this is not a good thing, that the same old players will be involved, that it will be co-opted, and no real change will come of it. Having observed a long time alongside of Alan, I tend to agree with that as well. What is the general feeling out there?
I think it depends who you ask. If you ask the unions who could be impacted, if you ask the special interest groups who can be impacted, if you ask the lawmakers who could be impacted by changes in the Constitution, whether it's, you know, pro-abortion, anti-abortion provisions put in there, whether it's term limits on, whether it's, you know, banning outside income for lawmakers, all these kind of things, all the people who really could be impacted on all sides of issues seem to be opposed to it. And the public has been polled. There's a plurality that is in support of it, but it's not an overwhelming majority that support it. And government reformers do, and they recognize the potential problems. But their argument is there's so much to fix in Albany that will not get fixed unless you... This is the one chance you'll have, is their argument, to fix Albany. It may not work. But the thing is, even if you vote for a convention and then they come up with recommendations, the public has to approve those recommendations. And in 1967, the last time there was a convention, the slate of recommendations went down. So it doesn't mean...
And you've spent a whole lot of money getting to that point.
Right. And that's another argument that, well, are you going to waste money? But to those who support it, it's worth the gamble. Mm. It may turn into nothing, but it's the only chance we have. To those who oppose it, it's a waste of money, and it's going to be run by the same interest groups that are messed up Albany in the first place.
By the way, what's this little item I see about Senator D'Amato and marijuana?
Ah, the man known as Senator Pothole is now going to be Senator Pot. He's a lobbyist now, and even though he opposed marijuana legalization, even medical marijuana, back when he was in the Senate, he's been hired as a senior advisor for a marijuana policy project, a national group that advocates for marijuana laws that's opening up a branch in New York State. They've hired an executive director, and they've taken on Al D'Amato to help them with the cause.
Will anybody ask him if he's inhaled?
That's a good question. I'm sure someone will. It could be me.
Ken Lovett, Albany Bureau Chief for the New York Daily News, with us this week on the Capital Connection. Alan will be back. Don't worry. And we thank you, Ken, always for sharing your extensive knowledge of what's happening in the Empire State.
Thank you.